such a privilege to be here with you today. I'm so excited. So thank you for packing up all your kids and their boots and bundling everyone. I know it's a big deal when you have small people and yourself and it's cold and snowy. So I made a little booklet with some of the stuff we're going to talk about. So your table leaders are going to hand them out right now to you. I think, do the table leaders have the... Not yet. Well, they will hand them out while I'm talking. So I know a lot of you like to look ahead to the end, but if you kind of go with me through the story, it will make more sense. So, you know, the MOPS theme for this year is to the full. So I don't know if you remember that, but what does that mean? That's one of the things that we're going to look at today. Does it mean perfect? It's one of my questions, because when I think about it, I kind of think of Facebook or Instagram, where you see these perfect pictures of Disneyland trips and really happy couples and kids with very perfect pigtails that I cannot ever get my daughter to keep in her hair. So is that what full means? So when God says, want you to have a full life, does he mean perfect? Unfortunately, we know that behind those filtered photographs are too often heartache, or illness, or broken marriages, loneliness. So I don't actually think that having a full life means having a perfect life. So we're just going to start here and say that full does not mean that your life has to be perfect. So with that in mind, I'm going to tell you a story. So this is me with my three sons, at a stage that probably a lot of you are at right now, where you get lots of cuddles and giggling, and also Legos crunching under your feet, and exploding diapers every time you forget to bring an extra outfit, lots of chicken nuggets and things like that. But a very Instagram-worthy picture, right? I had a dream life of marrying my high school sweetheart, married 10 years, and three very healthy kids, like within the same age, and leadership at a church that we loved, and a beautiful house where we could walk to things. So I really kind of had this dream life that I had wanted. But just like with Instagram pictures, when you look at this picture, what you don't know is that a year before this picture was taken, something very dark began to settle my house. And my husband, John, became very resentful and angry. It was exploding all the time, just all of a sudden. So, of course, at first I thought it's probably because we have three kids, like I'm sure a lot of you do. When you have three kids under the age of 4 or 5, everyone is tired. Everyone is stressed. So I was stressed. I was not my best self. But over time, I began to see that something else was going on. This was not, it wasn't going away. I wasn't being helped by vacations or, you know, sleeping or anything like that. And I remember one night in particular just kind of being shocked into the new reality, where my husband had been gone all weekend at this great art exhibition in Milwaukee. And he came back and opened the toy room door just at the time that I'm nursing my baby and he won't latch, so he's screaming. And my two little boys are fighting over a Lego piece in the corner and screaming, and he opens the door, and he looks at us and says, I don't know why I come home at all, and just walks back out the door. And I thought, who is this person? Like, this is not the person I married 10 years ago. So not long after that, he told me that he would be going to Germany that summer alone. And like, not long after that, he told me that he called me an hour before the Christmas party that his work had every year downtown, the fancy one, and told me not to come because he wanted to have fun. So, you know, my fresh, perfectly applied makeup was washed off with tears, and I took my designer dress off and threw it in the corner and never wore it again. So we had friends that tried to help us. They took us out to eat and asked questions, and John's answer was, I'm checking out. Checking out of what? My marriage. I did not even know that was an option. So they probed more, like, where is God in all of this? I mean, he was the leader of our men's ministry. And he yelled, "Why do you have to bring God into everything?" and threw his chair back and left, stormed out of the restaurant. Why did we have to bring God into everything? Where was God in this crazy thing that was happening to my life? So I found a counselor. John refused to see one. The tension just kept getting worse and worse, and no idea how to fix it until it was unlivable for my three little kids and me. So we met with our pastor and agreed that John could move out for a month to our friends had a studio in the city. He could live there for a month and find himself. I would hold down the fort with my kids. So we packed a suitcase, and through tears, we drove him to the train station. He kissed us. We watched him walk on the platform, waved goodbye, and went home to an empty house. I very vividly remember tucking my kids into bed very fast because I was trying to avoid their questions because I did not have any answers myself. And I just laid there asking God, "Are you here? Is there anything that you can do about this?" I mean, we both loved God. We had been faithful Christians. This was not how it was supposed to go. And I am a fixing person. Like, if there's a problem, I am already thinking of a plan. It was a pretty good plan, too. Like, I've got an idea, something I can do, and there was just nothing left to do. So, at one point, so I kept going, kept choosing to trust John. He would find his way, and trust God that he was at work. I mean, I knew he's for marriage, and he loves my kids, so surely he's doing something, right? So I'm waiting. So at one point, a friend sent me this story, which became kind of the mantra for that season for me. So it's in the book that you have or are going to get, but I'm going to read it to you right now. So there once was a man who was being chased by a ferocious tiger across a field. At the edge of the field, there was a cliff. In order to escape the jaws of the tiger, the man caught hold of a vine and swung himself over the edge of the cliff. Dangling down, he saw, to his dismay, there were more tigers on the ground below him. And furthermore, two little mice were gnawing on the vine, to which he clung. He knew that at any moment he would fall to certain death. But that's when he noticed a wild strawberry growing off the cliff wall. Clutching the vine with one hand, he plucked the strawberry with the other and put it in his mouth. He'd never realized before how sweet a strawberry could taste. So there's lots of different ways to read this, but what I felt like God was saying to me at the time was that even in these long days of single parenting in the unknown, that there were strawberries, that there were things and goodness that he was showing me. And sometimes they were bigger things, like mine vacation money that I got in the mail from someone I'd only met once that lived out of state. But most of the time, they were more ordinary things. They were like my favorite dinner on the front porch, or potty training finally, or like a bottle of wine with my friends. But they were there, and they were ways that God kept showing me, like, I'm here, there's goodness even while you're hanging on the cliff. So 9 months into the separation, John was visiting, playing with the boys, because he still came to see them. I mean, he seemed happier for sure when he was there, but it was 9 months in, and he's playing with them in the basement. And I went upstairs to get a receipt out of his wallet for a Target return. And like some horrible B movie, I find instead a receipt for a really fancy sushi dinner that he, for two people, for the night before, the night that he had said he had to work late. So all of a sudden, in that super slow motion moment, I knew. Everything made this horrible sense. And I immediately saw a picture in my head of this woman, Lisa, who had moved a year before to his office from New York City. And I just knew everything made sense. And I kind of, my mind checked out. I took off out of the house and ran barefoot down the street, just running and running and running, till I saw my neighbor sitting on her porch. And I crumpled up on her lap and just cried. I don't know for how long. When I finally came to myself, went back to the house, and I confronted him. And he denied it. He raged. He accused me of being an untrustworthy wife. Until finally, he just stopped. It was over, and we knew. He finally admitted he had been seeing Lisa for the whole year, and he was not going to stop. he wouldn't leave her. So I yelled, "Get out." And he did. He packed his bags, more of his bags. He walked out the front door and he left the house that we had spent, I don't even know how many nights, on the front porch dreaming about the things that were going to come. He left the backyard where we had transplanted all of these hostas from our childhood homes, or the crib upstairs where our toddler was still sleeping. He just left. So over the coming time, I gave him a long time for reconciliation, still hoping and praying that God could do a miracle. But my miracle did not come. He said that he loved me, and he loved her. He said that he loved our kids, but he loved her. He said he missed us, but he wouldn't leave her. And so in the end, he made a final decision and chose her once and for all. So back to this picture. My perfect Instagram life had disintegrated. So what could God possibly do with my life now? And the big questions I was asking, is he the same God in my mess as I thought he was when everything seemed perfect? Could I still have a full life? Did he still have good plans for my life? So today, I'm sharing three main things that helped me through this time and to believe that there's a full life with God no matter what your circumstances are today. I really believe that. So the first is faith. Seems kind of simple. We're sitting here in a church, so we all have some kind of interest in faith, right? At least curiosity, if not kind of a deeper faith life. But what do we mean by that? That's, again, kind of a nice word to think about. So for today, I'm going to define it as this: really inviting God into your story and believing that he's good and that he is trustworthy. That it, when it comes down to it, that really what it is what it is. Doing life with God and believing that he is who he says he is. There's an old saying that in our 20s, we're usually on kind of a spiritual incline where everything is possible and we have these big hopes and dreams, and so our fight is against the devil. But sometime in our 30s or 40s, we often encounter something that we can't control. Something unexpected happens. It might be disease or death of someone you love or divorce. And all of a sudden, our struggles with God. Like, are you the same God that I believed in when everything was possible? Now that doors are closing and things didn't go exactly the way that I thought. So these are the questions we usually ask when our faith gets challenged in difficulty. Are you good? I mean, this isn't what I think goodness would look like. Can I trust you? These are the questions I was asking too. Like, this is a huge mess. Can I trust you with this? Are you able to do anything? Like, what is actually possible for you? And these are the questions I was asking. So, for me, something died that year, my marriage. And a lot of you have encountered death of different things, like even death of dreams, death of physical death, someone that you love, or death of relationships. And when we're grieving, we're going through this pain, and God is with us. He's very near and present, but there's often not a magical fix to that pain. There's suffering. So where is God in that? I remember the depth of my despair kind of in these like Instagram snapshots. I remember that first week after finding out, being in the doctor's office sobbing, asking for sleeping pills because it had been 72 hours since I slept. I just couldn't turn my mind off. I remember sitting down with my three little boys and telling them that their father wasn't coming back, but we could still have a good life. And my five-year-old said, but not a really good life, like if we were a whole family. I remember gradually moving into my new space in the middle of the bed, or taking off my wedding ring for good and putting it away, or throwing my calligraphied wedding vows into the dumpster. And all the while, I kept asking these questions. God, where are you? Are you able to do anything? And are you good? What does your goodness look like here? So even as I began to rebuild my life, deal with my broken heart, the hearts of my boys, I learned to keep looking for these strawberries and seeing the goodness of God. I saw that they were there even when I felt like we were very much hanging on that cliff, surrounded by tigers. There was a free trip to Los Angeles to see one of my best friends that moved there. I remember the day that my mortgage was due, and I had $312 in my bank account, and I walked out to my mailbox, and there was an envelope with $2,000 of cash in it. I remember the young woman, Lorena, from our church, who offered to move in with me and help with the little boys and driving and just being there. There was a day that I opened my front door and this older woman was standing there asking to take my laundry, which she brought back fresh and folded that night. So there was deep despair and there was beautiful strawberries all along the way. God kept using them to remind me that he was still at work, asking me to have faith and hope, that it wasn't always going to feel so dark. And sometimes my faith and hope were like these tiny little mustard seeds, but it was enough for him. This is one of my favorite quotes about faith. Faith is like the bird who feels the light and sings while it is still dark. And the truth about faith is that it's the most beautiful and powerful in that moment when it's still dark, when we don't know what the outcome's going to be or how things are going to work out and everything feels impossible. That's actually like a gift that we can give God on this side of heaven, where we don't know and see everything, but we choose to trust him anyway. So in the long days of rebuilding, a shift began, and God began to speak a new word to me, quietly, but over and over again, enough that I could not miss it. So the word was forgiveness, which is the second slide that we're going to talk about, which I'm calling freedom. So I'd come fairly far with John at this point. A couple years in, we're co-parenting well together. I'm accepting the reality of what it is. But John had married Lisa. And, you know, my kids saw Lisa all the time, every weekend, stayed at her house, and told me all about her and how she made these beautiful cardboard monsters all the time and baked amazing cheesecakes. And, you know, was very, very fun. They had lots of stories. But I had not seen Lisa for probably 3 years, just the day that I saw her at my husband's party when she had first moved there. And I think her and I both felt like it could just stay that way indefinitely. But God did not think the same thing. So he said, yes, there was more. So I began the next season of my impossible journey. Forgiveness is one thing to think about or do when someone steals your Barbie out of the sandbox. It's quite another thing when someone steals your husband. So today, on Ash Wednesday, we're going to dig a little bit into forgiveness and what God showed me at this season. So choosing, because it's a choice, to give grace in the face of a real harmful wrong is not just a piece of our faith. It's the whole thing. It's not part that we get to choose. It's really the whole thing. When Jesus talks about forgiveness, which he does a lot in the Bible, he does not mince words. There's no middle ground. He is always, always trying to get across how important and serious this is, that it is the whole thing. So in your booklet, I wrote some of the verses where he talks about this, but for time's sake, we're not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to read one, which is Jesus telling a parable, which is another way of saying story, because he was a storyteller too. So Matthew 8, verse 23 begins with Peter, who is the ever-curious, sort of bumbling disciple, with a question for Jesus. It says, at that point, Peter got up the nerve to ask, Master, how many times do I forgive a brother or sister who hurts me? Seven? Which is his way of impressing Jesus, because clearly this was a generous response. Jesus replied, seven? Try 70 times seven, which is Hebrew for saying indefinitely, basically. So Jesus continues with this story. The kingdom of God is like a king who decided to square accounts with his servants. As he got underway, one servant was brought before him who had run up a debt of $100,000. He couldn't pay up, so the king ordered the man, along with his wife, children, and goods, to be auctioned off at the slave market. The poor wretch threw himself at the king's feet and begged, "Give me a chance, and I will pay it all back." Touched by his plea, the king let him off, erasing the debt. The servant was no sooner out of the room when he came upon one of his fellow servants who owed him $10. He seized him by the throat and demanded, "Pay up now." The poor wretch threw himself down and begged, "Give me a chance and I'll pay it all back." But he wouldn't do it. He had him arrested and put in jail until the debt was paid. When the other servants saw this going on, they were outraged and brought a detailed report to the king. His people noticed things like this. The king summoned the man and said, "You evil servant, I forgave your entire debt when you begged me for mercy. Shouldn't you be compelled to be merciful to your fellow servant who asked for mercy?" The king was furious, put the screws to the man until he paid back his entire debt. The truth of the kingdom of God is that we are offered a chance to live in a new way. We actually don't have to live in this account, ledger, rule-keeping way with God or with people. He has made a higher way. And he knows what sometimes we don't understand, that we can't choose to live in one realm, the grace realm, for ourselves, in a different realm, the justice realm, for everyone else. If we demand our rights, we're choosing the way of justice. We are asking, demanding, that the consequences of sin be paid and rejecting this way of freedom that God made for us. But the reality is that moving towards forgiveness can feel horrible. Like, usually we are hurt because someone legitimately hurt us. They cost us something. They stole from us. They wounded us. They wounded someone we love. And trying to deal with that can be painful. It feels horribly unfair, because it is. But God knows something that we don't always know. Fairness is deceptive and crippling. We don't actually need fairness, we need freedom. And also, it's extremely powerful. The enemy likes to distract us from this by lying to us, by reminding us of the hurt and what it cost us, and also by saying that forgiveness is a passive, weak approach, when in fact, it is the most powerful thing that you can do. And we see that even as we begin the Lent journey, Jesus went through all of this suffering, all of this unfair treatment, and then chose an unfair ending. And in the end, what he got was all power and authority. So Nadia Boltz-Weber, excuse me, is a Lutheran pastor. I really like her. This is a quote from her. It's also in your book. "So what if weather than being a pansy way of saying, it's okay? Forgiveness is actually a way of wielding bolt cutters and snapping the chains that link us. It's saying what you did was so not okay that I refuse to be connected to it anymore. Forgiveness is about being a freedom fighter, and free people are dangerous people. Free people aren't controlled by the past. Free people laugh more than others. Free people see beauty where others do not. Free people are not easily offended. Free people are not chained to resentment, and that is worth fighting for. There really is a light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot, will not, shall not overcome it." I have to say, God was so gentle with me in this process. It was not a checkbox. It was not an overnight thing. It was not a linear line. And many times it was 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. But I felt him with me all the time. He was fighting for my freedom, freedom of my kids, my family, my friends, right alongside me. So the day finally came where I invited Lisa to come over and meet with me, and she agreed. I had no idea what I was going to say, so I prayed about it. I felt like God showed me this picture of me washing her feet. I did not think she would be excited about that. So prayed a little bit more. And I kind of felt like it was really a picture of honor that he was saying to start with honor. I did not like that either, but kept praying and thinking. And, you know, she had been kind and good to my children, and she had not turned them against me or caused divisiveness there. So I could start with that, with gratitude. So the day came, waiting for her to ring my doorbell, and this is how I felt. Total panic set in. Crazy voices and that Instagram show of everything the last few years had cost me and how my life had changed and how unfair it was. I felt like I was going to vomit. I thought it was probably the stupidest idea I'd ever had, the worst idea. I was actually literally thinking about running out the back door when the doorbell rang. So I went to the door to open it to see this woman I'd been thinking about for 3 years, the perfect, beautiful Lisa. You know, I opened the door, and she was pretty regular looking, just anxious like me. She came inside and sat down at my kitchen table, and I started with the only thing I had prepared, and I had not even finished my sentence when she just began to weep, and she said, "I am so sorry. There are so many things I wish I would have done differently." And because of all of the work that God had done with me up until that point, I was able to look at her and say, "I forgive you," from a real heart place. And all of a sudden, this is how I felt. We talked more, and when she left, I felt the opposite of everything that the enemy had said I would feel. I felt lighter. I felt free. I was smiling. I had wielded those bolt cutters, and I honestly felt free. You know, forgiveness is hard to define. What is it? And I found this, you know, again, it's kind of a big word we throw around, we hear. What does it really mean? When I was practicing it and breaking it down, and even as the years continued, I found this prayer really helpful because it helps kind of break it down a little bit. So again, this is in your book, but when we say, "I forgive you," we're really trying to get to the point of saying, "I bless you. I am wanting good things for you," or choosing that for you. "I release you. I'm not tied to you or this anymore. And you owe me nothing." Again, it's probably cost you something, but you are trusting God with that cost, that debt. And he is trustworthy. So getting to the point of being able to do this can definitely be a process. And yet I want you to hear today that there is nothing that has been done to you or that you've done yourself. Sometimes we need to forgive ourselves for things that is worth paying the high cost of staying tied to that or living in this justice realm. God has made a higher way of freedom for you. So this, actually, I'm not quite there yet. I wanted to say, too, that it's an amazing practice to build into your life. So, like, it's a habit. I mean, not only do we have these big rocks sometimes, but we live in a broken world with broken people. We get wounded all the time, right? In our marriages, with friends, with family members. And it really is a toxin. Like, you know, we did this great stuff at the last MOPS meeting where we're dealing with the physical toxins or things we do, like yoga and things like that. But there is such a thing as detoxing our spirit as well. Even scientists agree resentment and bitterness are extremely toxic to your health. So making a practice of sitting with God and letting him sift to the surface people that you need to forgive will really help keep you living the full life that God has for you. So God and I kept moving forward in faith, now in freedom, but life was still pretty messy. There were a lot of nighttime tears and questions. The grief and exhaustion was wearing me down. I started taking antidepressants, which for the record might have saved my life. They helped so much. But I was relentlessly asking God, "Where are you? I believe in you. I have faith, but where are you? What is next?" He did not fix my marriage. You did not bring my husband back or keep my children from experiencing the raw pain of their father leaving. It was confusing to my faith because up until that point, to be honest, I kind of felt like if I do everything right, I'm going to get this. And like an exchange, like I follow God's rules, I do X, he does Y. And this did not fit my expectation. So this is one of my favorite faith quotes too. If there's anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe, I know nothing of it, for it was not shown to me. But this was shown, that in falling and rising again, we are always kept in that same precious love. And that is where I was at. The type of fullness I was learning next was how to live with God, rising and falling again, kept in his love in the middle of still pretty messy circumstances. I still, most of the days, felt like I was hanging on a cliff and there were tigers and there was darkness. I was still waiting. So much was unknown, which leads to the third key, which is fun. Cultivating gratitude and joy is really what I mean. And it's kind of bringing it back around to the strawberries. So every day, even in your dark conditions, God is at work. He's showing up. He is bringing strawberries. And our part is to cultivate awareness, which we do that through practicing gratitude and joy and just looking for him. Like, where are you today? So everything isn't perfect. That's okay. He is still here. He is still active in your life today, exactly where it's at. Not waiting for it to look more perfect, but today. So even as I continued struggling through exhaustion of single parenting and dealing with rejection and betrayal, I learned to see God more and more and more in these strawberries, and it gave me hope to keep going. Like, he's still here. He's got to be up to something. There were these big things like a trip to China to see with my oldest son to see my best friend that lived there. But most of them were more like this. You know, my six-year-old making this list of what he wanted. He wanted a video game, pajama pants, and a date with mom. This was a drawing my 3 or 4 year-old made of our new family. But we're all happy. We're holding hands. We're a big heart. You know, or the moments where they're just, like, I'm cooking dinner and my husband isn't there to read, but my ex-husband, but they can read to each other or they're dressing up. Like, these moments were still there. My life was still full, even in the imperfectness. You know, even with these sweet strawberry moments, there were these equally, like, desperate moments where I'm still crying out to God. I remember very clearly standing on the cement floor of our basement at 2 a.m. because, of course, all three children had the flu the same night. So I'm scrubbing out vomit from pajamas because our washing machine was broken again. And the whole time, there's this horrible clawing in the cement pipe by me because another squirrel had fallen down the chimney and was slowly dying. Another problem I could not fix. I had no idea what to do. And it just hit me. Why am I doing this alone? How did this happen? Just crumpled onto the floor. The day my 7-year-old was so excited to go biking with his friend, and he gets on his bike and the chain falls off. Easy for some people. It was not easy for me. I didn't know anything about bikes. All of a sudden, I'm covered in grease. The bike is still not working. I have to carry it back in pieces to the shed, and he goes back inside crying. But the best thing that I did was to keep going. I didn't give up, and I believed God what he said, that this was not the end of my story. It felt dark. I did not know what was going to happen or when it was going to happen, but I knew that he was there, that my story wasn't over, and that not all days were going to feel this dark. This is one of my favorite verses about faith. No ear has heard, no eye has seen, a God like you who works for those who wait for him. Works for who? People that are perfect? People that do everything right? People who follow all the rules? No. People who wait for him. I mean, you can't get much more simple than that. one of the biggest elements of faith and a full life is sometimes waiting, like not giving up and waiting in faith. So at this certain point, kind of still moving through everything, I felt like God said to start dreaming again. So that might sound fun, but to me, it sounded horrible because I had dreams before and I watched them all burn up. And it's vulnerable to say out loud, you know what, I really would like XYZ, because I felt all of a sudden like all I could do is care about these basic needs. How am I going to provide for my kids? What am I going to do? But God was like, no, really, really want you to do this. So took my journal out one night, like, okay, just writing down what comes to my mind first and not going to overanalyze it, write it down. I did that and put it back in my dresser. This is the actual page I wrote. You'll notice this nice, there it is, man with a beard. That's what I wrote. Why did that come to mind? I think because I always have really liked beards. My ex-husband could not grow a beard. So I thought, if I'm possibly going to get another husband, perhaps he could have a beard. So it was weird, weird enough that I put a smiley face by it, but I was like, that's what's in my mind. So I put it back in my dresser, don't think about it. A couple weeks later, I get a Facebook message from this guy named Nate who I knew a few years back from our church before his family had moved, but we still had this mutual friend. And the mutual friend had suggested he reach out to me because I might have some books he could borrow, because I really like books, and I do have a lot of books if you ever want to borrow them. And he had just gone through the same thing, like exactly. His ex-wife had left, was living with her boyfriend, and he was learning how to single parent three little kids on his own. So I said, sure, I have books. So we arranged a time a couple nights later. I'm reading, doorbell rings, I get up, open the door, and I don't even recognize him because his always clean-shaven face had this beautiful beard. And I found out later that 2 weeks before that, he suddenly was overwhelmed with this urge to start growing a beard for the first time in his life. So he comes in and shuts the door, and his eyes fall on the table by my chair where I was reading, and he starts laughing. He opens his saddlebag and pulls out the exact same book. It was the Strength Finder book, and he said, it's one of my favorite books, and I haven't read it for a while, and this morning I was overwhelmed by this urge to find it again, so much so that he was late for work, digging through boxes in his basement to pull it out. So instead of a long, dark night talking about single parenting, we talked about this book that we both loved, which is about your strengths, and we talked about that. We were laughing. It was fun. Felt like I could have talked to him all night, and when he left that night, he left out the door, I just had this sense, is this plan B? And Nate thought so too. So we're now in our 10th year of marriage, and I can tell you that God's plan B was just as beautiful as plan A. You know, when there was more GPS, I know we use our phones, but when you're doing GPS and you make a wrong turn and it says recalculating, I felt like that's what God did for us. He couldn't control someone else's choices, but he could recalculate our life for the same goodness and beauty and fullness. I'm very grateful to be married to a man who is so smart and kind and loves me and loves my kids and loves God. Honestly, he has so much integrity. So you might remember that I said that he had three children. Well, they were the same age as my three children. So all of a sudden, we had six children under the age of 8. And the five oldest were all boys. I also had two old cats. He had a kitten and a big dog. And so all of a sudden, my life was very full indeed. This, I could have showed you like a nicer picture, but this is how it felt. Pretty blurry. People are all over each other. We're crammed into this little house. And it was a time. I will tell you, we had no idea what we were doing. Blending a family and crazy pets, brand new marriage, two sets of exes, can't get the cat to stop picking on the dog, trying to feed 8 people every night, trying to get them all clean at the same time. It was pretty crazy. But we had God still. We had each other. And in the end, it was enough. So people, when we got married, people used to ask if we were going to have more kids. We would laugh hysterically. And then we decided to ask God what he thought about it. He did not laugh. So instead, he started to soften our hearts to this very impossible idea. And before we knew it, here we had 2 more. So Anissa, right here. Oh, there she is. This one. She was a particular strawberry because she was my 5th and last birth, my first daughter that I birthed, which I had really been praying for like 20 years. And she was also the most unexpected, for the record. But So I started the last decade hanging on a cliff, surrounded by tigers. I wasn't special. I did not do this perfectly or have the best resources. But what I had in the end was enough. So if you hear me say one thing this morning, please let it be this. You have it too. You have a huge God who loves you beyond your wildest imaginings. He wants to give you a beautiful, full life. No matter what circumstances you're in right now, no matter what you've done, no matter what has been done to you, nothing is impossible for him. I believe that with my whole heart. And this amazing God who worked while I was waiting is working for you too, right now. You know, the Bible is full of stories where regular people, even whole people groups, are trapped in the darkest, most dire circumstances. Total impossibility. A childless woman, long past childbearing age. An army of 500 surrounded by an army of 10,000. A weak people group enslaved by an all-powerful empire. A woman bleeding her whole life with no hope. And just when it seems the darkness can't get any darker, the story always continues with my 2 favorite words in the Bible. But God. He loves to be invited into our stories, especially when they seem impossible, especially when we don't know what to do, and it's very dark. He loves to work for those who wait on him. Of course, the problem with waiting is that it takes time, right? We read these Bible stories in like a page, but the reality is they were often waiting years, and I was waiting. But there are beautiful things that happen in time too. So here's a couple examples. So this slide, this was, I don't know what I did, hold on. There it is. So this, there, the picture I showed you before. When my son was 3 or 4 and he made this picture of our new family. And then this is my son when I got married to Nate, same son. And then this artwork, which you have in your little book, he, now 16, did all of the artwork for me to be able to tell you the story today. So that is one thing that can happen in time. This Easter, my husband had to work, and so John and Lisa invited me and my 2 little kids over for an Easter egg hunt. So I spent Easter afternoon with them and our 3 older boys, and their 2 little kids, who are the same age as my 2 little kids, watching them laughing, running around, hunting for eggs. That is some of the best fruit that you can get from wielding those bolt cutters. This fall, John and Nate and I drove my oldest son to college. We rode together, we stayed in the same hotel, we went out to eat together. It was fun. We were all able to hug him goodbye and then drive back to Chicago together. Again, that is worth the work, the healing. That is God's way being higher than our way. Just last week, Nate's 3 older kids said that John is like an uncle to them. Again, it's worth it. So this new decade, this is my new family. They deeply love and adore each other. the things that the enemy meant for evil, God has truly used for good. Even when we can't change our circumstances, which happens more than we'd like, God never stops working. But this could be an Instagram post too, right? So is my life perfect now? Not by a long shot. You know, there was real damage from the divorce and divorces. You know, our kids have struggled with depression and even suicide and sexuality and faith. They've all had counselors. We have a counselor. And I have a great marriage, but it's not perfect. It's full and it's beautiful, but it isn't perfect. You know, even now, we've been going through a really horrible court battle for a while, and it feels horribly unfair. It's been costly and emotional, and everything in me is craving justice. But I know now that there's a better way, and I keep practicing these same things that I'm telling you about today because I know that they are true and that they are real and they are worth it, even if you don't see it immediately. So we're just going to end by going back to these three things. Faith. Stay near to God, even in your anger or disappointment. He is good, and he can be trusted with your story and your pain. He cares about details, like even if you're dreaming about beards. So don't be afraid to be vulnerable with him. And then freedom. Do not let any wrong that has been done to you keep you from the free, real, higher way of grace. Do the work to choose that higher way of grace and forgiveness. I promise you that God will not waste your pain and that his way is better. He is trustworthy. And then fun, cultivate that gratitude and joy. And even while you're waiting for things to take shape, even when you don't know what the next step is, I promise you that he is at work. He has strawberries for you today, exactly where you're at, even if hanging on a cliff. So my friend Dana is going to come up here and play a little music while I'm going to give you some time, just like 5 or 10 minutes. We are so busy, right? We are pulled in a million different directions, and yet this stuff is so important. So especially today on Ash Wednesday, I put a couple of pieces of paper in the back of your book, and one of them has rocks on it, and one of them has strawberries. And we're going to give you a little space to just enter in with God and ask him, is anything coming to mind? Are there any rocks that are keeping you from living in that free space that you want to give over to God? Is there some areas of forgiveness to look at in your life? And the strawberries, is there good fruit? Is there things that God is doing in your life right now that you just want to take note of? What today, this week, this year, where is God at work in your life? What's some of the goodness that you can just thank him for today? And then whenever you feel ready, you can, if you want to, receive ashes. You can go over here where Sue Ann will be able to do that. So I'm just going to close us with prayer and let you dig in. Thank you so much for the chance to talk today. So Father, thank you that you're here with us, that you are at work, that you love us so much. You never stop fighting for our freedom and making a new way. I pray for each of us that we would open our hearts up to you and be raw before you today and trust you with our stories in a new way so that we could see even more of your goodness and your hand in our lives. We love you. We give you this time. Amen.